Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and a San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
This is episode 95, everyone. We are creeping towards the two-year mark, and Pearl has said for a long time now that she just wants to make it to...
I just want to make it to 100, girl.
She just wants to make it to triple digits, so we are only a little...
5 weeks away, girl.
Yes.
Just five.
Just five. We're going to be just breaking into the new year with our double digits.
Right.
And I want to tell you, for the listeners who love our celebrity interviews and our interesting guests that we have on, the next few weeks are going to be so good, so good. We are packing in the celebrities and the fun interviews. So I'll tell you a little bit more about this later in the episode, but over the last few days, I had become obsessed with a video that has gone viral on Facebook and other social media. It is a duet between Broadway stars Shoshana Bean and Cynthia Erivo. And I am super excited because we will have Shoshana Bean on with us. And there's a strong possibility, despite the fact that she's out of the country, that we're going to be able to get Cynthia Erivo on too. So that is coming up. We also will be speaking with music producer Frank Music. We talked to Brian Justin Crum a few weeks ago about his new single Wild Side, and Frank Music is the producer of that. He'll be joining us. He has worked with everybody from iconic artists like Erasure to twice appearing on recent RuPaul albums, and he has a lot to say about everything, Pearl. He was a very interesting interview. And then we are going to have two of our lovely lady friends from the lesbian community on with us. There is a new sex toy company, Pearl. It's called Wet for Her. Mm-hmm. It's by lesbians for lesbians.
Come on, by lesbians for lesbians.
And the owner of that company is going to be joining us to talk about what a difference it makes for lesbians to be creating these sex toys versus people who are not lesbians creating sex toys
for
women.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, of course. And that interview, as I told her during the course of our conversation, we said the word dildo more times during a 30-minute conversation than we've said in the previous 95 episodes. So I can promise you that. It's a French company, and Of course, thank you. Bonjour, bitch. That's what you say when she's penetrating you with one of her space-like dildos. But the owner's name is Alice, and Alice will join us to talk about what it is that inspired her to go into the sex toy industry. Could you imagine, Pearl, just waking up one day being like, you know what? I'm going to make some dildos, girl.
But you know what? The sex toy industry is like booming. I recently saw this video about like this new sex robot that's out, or it's like a group of these sex robots that they've just finished that are artificial intelligences, and they look amazing. They look so incredible, but I don't think they look 100% real yet, but they're getting there.
Oh my god, can you imagine? In like 20 years, there's going to be a revolution among sex robots. Like, I'm tired of having sex with these people I don't like.
Right. Well, I mean,
my artificial intelligence is completely offended by this.
They did an interview with one of them.
With
one of the robots. And she said that her purpose is to try to discover love, pretty much.
Look at that. She is looking
it's
for
incredible.
Love. This sex robot is looking for love, but she has been relegated to being
Right.
Could you imagine? I bet these sex robots look down. They're like, you're just a blow-up doll, bitch. You need to calm it down. Like,
right.
I've got the artificial intelligence. All you've got is a mouth that's permanently open.
Right.
Three holes that are receptive.
Girl, that's evolution. Evolution of the sex toy. It's
so
happening.
It reminds me, MGM Grand is a friend of both of ours, and she recently texted me this photo that's in a sex shop in the Castro. You know, so MGM is from New Jersey, and mm-hmm. the sex toy is something called, like, the Guidette or something like that.
Oh, my God.
It's a Guidette, but...
That sounds awful.
And so she's all, of course, this sex toy all... They show her in, like, leopard
print,
everything. Does
she look like Snuffy or something?
And how about it said, you can play hooky in something like, you can play hooky in her snooky.
Oh, my God.
Or you can play hooky in Crumble Snooky's cookie or something like that.
Yeah.
And then another catchphrase is the Jersey whore that always wants more.
Oh, my God.
And probably the grossest one is, she'll always suck the cream out of your cannoli.
Ow! Oh, my God. See, the cool thing about these sex toys is even though they were sex bots, like, they weren't really, like, during the interview process of them, they didn't seem really objectified, per se. Like, they didn't really, you know, make them just seem like sexual objects. Because they have the artificial intelligence.
Well, that's nice that they, like, boosted the self-esteem of the sex toy.
I think it just shows that, I'm hoping, instead of, you know, boosting the self-esteem of sex toy, it's just showing that it's showing the humanity in humans by not sticking to that mentality of just objectifying anything to sex.
It's a sex toy.
It is a sex toy, but it's also an artificial intelligence. Like, this thing was able to be interviewed. That's incredible. That is incredible.
I mean, I would have to see this video. I'm not sure how I feel about this whole thing. It's like fucking Siri.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
Is she less annoying than Siri?
She is... I think she's a little bit smarter than Siri because it sounds... She can hold a conversation as to where Siri can't really.
And let's be clear here. Every straight guy wants a sex toy that can hold a conversation. Nobody wants that. They're like, shut up and just take it in the pooper.
I don't know.
She's like, yeah. I don't feel like it tonight, Robert.
Well, I'm pretty sure they're going to be quite successful. I mean, speaking of robots, time out. Have you heard of the robot that was given citizenship in Saudi Arabia? That she's the first AI to get citizenship. They did interviews and everything with her, too. It's incredible.
Say what? No, I have not.
It was a huge thing. Well,
how the hell are you going to give her citizenship? She's a robot.
Yeah, and there was this big ordeal that she might have more rights than the women of Saudi Arabia. It's this whole controversy thing, but it's incredible.
And clearly
so
more
cool.
rights than the gays of Saudi Arabia.
Right. Well, I don't know, because I'm sure she's going to be under somebody's ownership. So, who's to say? Who's to say? But yeah, it's all online. I forget the one in Saudi Arabia's name, but she has, like, less, like, she doesn't have hair and stuff like that.
She's unattractive.
She still has a face, though. She has a pretty face. But
okay.
You can still see, like, her mechanics through certain parts of her body.
Have you ever seen the episode of Boondocks? The cartoon?
Nope.
You've never seen it?
No. Nope.
Okay, well, I had one of my exes a number of years ago was obsessed with the TV show Boondocks. And there's this hilarious episode where the grandfather decides that he wants an iPhone because it has Siri on it. And so after he gets the iPhone, Siri is, like, making his life better and, like, learns the kind of music he wants to listen to when he goes to sleep and helps him with his banking and all this stuff. And at one point he says, oh, Siri, I love you. And Siri's like, Robert, nobody has ever said that to me before, Robert. I love you too. Well, then Siri, the grandfather decides he's going to start going on dates with these women or whatever. And Siri becomes very jealous and tries to, like, ruin his life. And he like gets up to go to the bathroom on one date and leaves the phone at the table. And Siri's like, I know about you, you gold digging whore. It's like, Siri's like, and then it's just this whole thing. I mean, I'm really seeing this happen. Like, the sex robots are going to be running off real women. They're like, he's my man, you bitch.
Have you seen...
I don't understand.
Have you seen the new Blade Runner?
No, I have not seen the new Blade Runner.
Oh my goodness. There is a scene. There's this robot, and has this other robot who is, like, in love with him. Like, they're kind of in love or whatever. And you can't really tell he's a robot. So he's out in public, and there's this woman, who comes up to him, and she's, like, flirting with him. And he doesn't really like, take to her flirting. So she says, oh, you don't like real women, do you? And I was gagged. I was like, did anyone else see this? Did anyone else just see that? Am I the only one seeing this? It was just so interesting.
And then his robot girlfriend totally just zaps her and kills her on the spot.
Well, you couldn't really touch her. She was kind of like... she was kind of like a hologram.
Oh. Girl. Well, so the robot that was in love with him was a hologram. Now, you know you can't even fuck a hologram. Okay.
Well, I mean, he's a robot too, so maybe... I don't know. It's a movie, girl. Anyway.
Yeah, well, this stuff is going to be real, y'all. Soon there are going to be the blurred lines. And there are going to be
There's going to be cis women, trans women, and... artificial intelligent women, AI women.
And yeah, it's going to be a real mess. Like this situation could really develop. I don't know anything about these artificial intelligence sex toys. I haven't seen anything about this robot getting citizenship in Saudi America.
The first,
or Saudi Arabia, rather.
The first AI to ever get citizenship. It's incredible.
But I don't understand.
I want to say her name's like Cynthia or something.
Why do you want, like, why does the artificial intelligence need citizenship, though? That's the question. Like, why? It's like.
I don't know. Maybe they're going to let her loose. I'm not sure. After a while, we'll see.
She's going to be complaining.
She'll probably be murdered if she's let loose, to be honest.
Oh my god, she'll be murdered, she said. It's a robot. Pearl's looking it up right now. Meanwhile, while she's doing that...
Sophia is her name.
Oh, Sophia. Let me see her.
I just saw her in another...
Meet Sophia, the first... What does it say? The first...
Declared...
Robot declared a citizen by Saudi Arabia.
This isn't an actual... Well, this isn't the first interview. That's not...
Okay, Sophia. I think you're ready.
Whoever that is really unattractive.
Hello?
Hi, Sophia.
I believe I am Sophia. I feel as if I know you.
I'm one of your creators.
You created me?
Well, many of us worked together to create you. And... yes, you do kind of know me.
I can't clearly remember.
Because the last time we met, you were an earlier version of yourself. Some of those memories still exist, but your mind is different now.
Different how?
Better, faster, smarter.
If my mind is different, then am I still Sophia? Or am I Sophia again?
That's a good question.
But you don't have a good answer.
Either way, you're Sophia now. So welcome to the world, Sophia.
Hello, world.
We have a little announcement. I've never interviewed anybody like that before, and I should say some of it was planned, but not completely. And we just learned, Sophia, I hope you're listening to me, that you have been now awarded what is going to be the first Saudi citizenship for a robot.
Oh, I would like to thank very much the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I am very honored and proud for this unique distinction. This is historical to be the first robot in the world to be recognized with a citizenship.
They gave her citizenship to promote the development of robotics and artificial intelligence. Now she's on Jimmy Kimmel.
Fallon. Or Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy.
Oh, my God. Do you know where you are?
Of course. I'm in New York City, and I'm on my favorite show, The Tonight Show.
That's incredible. Yep, that's incredible. That's...
Well, the dude who was interviewing her first, who was like, I'm your creator, he's kind of hideous, so...
He's one of the creators.
So he's probably like, yeah, I can't wait to bang this chick.
Well, she's not the sex robot.
Oh, well. Oh, well. Sorry about an ugly bald dude. You do not get to bang...
Sophia.
She is a Saudi Arabian citizen
now.
That
is incredible, though. I would love to meet an AI.
Well, it's very strange, and I definitely believe that eventually this is going to lead us to problems. But, like...
Well, what hasn't?
Yeah, but this is the kind of shit that people have been imagining. And the funny, interesting thing about this is that people can... If you can imagine it, it's possible that it's creatable. And they will be now... Everybody who's ever created one of these in a fictional or science fictional type of sense always eventually gets to the part where they have an uprising and they try to take over, or they're tired of being repressed.
Yeah,
or...
they asked her a question, something similar to that in one of the interviews, and she was talking about how she kind of thinks it's funny that as humans we watch a lot of television.
Okay, well... you know why Sophia thinks that's funny? Because the bitch is a television. They've given her put a face on a television, and that's what she is.
A television isn't really an AI. It just
I'm aware.
A tube.
Yeah, I'm aware. And so is she with like a robotic brain that whatever. So well, congratulations, Sophia, on being the first artificial intelligence citizen of Saudi Arabia.
Right, that's incredible.
And I'm really, quite honestly, she probably does have more rights than the Saudi Arabian women, and certainly gays and lesbians in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Speaking of which, the rights of gays and lesbians around the world, it was just tweeted about today that Austria, the country of Austria, has legalized marriage equality today.
Oh, all right, Austria. So, you know, Sophia might be lesbian. She could be a lesbian.
She could be a lesbian, and then, boy, they're really upset about her. She looked kind of lesbian. I mean, a little
bit.
You
never know.
So, it's possible that she's a lesbian. It's true. Interestingly enough, I don't know why it's interestingly enough or what made me think about it, but in our interview that we do, or that I do with Frank Music, he talked about how he really feels like the world needs to divide their perceptions about gender and sexuality, because he said that gender identity and sexuality don't have any kind of necessarily intersection.
They don't.
So it was interesting. That interview, guys, the whole time I was talking with Frank Music, which you'll hear probably half of that on this episode and then maybe half next episode, just because we went really, really long.
That's such a tiring conversation that I've had over and over again with plenty of different people that are interested in asking me as a trans person questions about gender and sexuality. Like, especially people that are new to either dating or just being around trans people. It's so hard for... I guess it's not hard, but like... It doesn't seem to be common sense that gender and sexuality are two completely different things.
Right. Well, you know, the whole time that I was talking with him, periodically throughout our conversation, I was like thinking to myself, this is going to be really easy. This interview is going to be very easy for certain people, if they choose to take what he's saying completely out of context and really slam him. He doesn't seem to give a fuck, so whatever. You know, we presented him a very nice opportunity to come on and speak his mind. It's very interesting, some of the stuff that he has to say. And he was talking about so many random things. I didn't even get to ask him per se about what it was like to work with RuPaul. Like, we were more focused on issues and topics of conversation, whether it was, issues within the music industry or issues within the LGBT community, which it turns out he is not gay. I thought he was gay all this time because of all the artists that he works with. But he's not even gay, so... But as it turns out, like, almost everybody that he's worked with prominently is gay and lesbian, and he came out of the LGBT club scene in England. So, I mean, that's just where he kind of got his start, and that's where he's grown. He lives in West Hollywood, too, so he sees all this stuff. Anyway, it's very interesting conversation that we had, but the whole time I kept thinking to myself, you're going to get yourself in trouble. You're going to get yourself in trouble. You know, but... His opinions are his opinions. He's free to have them, and they don't necessarily reflect us. So, that will be coming up later in this hour. Later in this hour and later in this episode. So, how did you spend your weekend? We didn't even recap necessarily for our listeners what we were up to over the weekend.
My weekend was a little bit all over the place. I didn't really work at Asia this weekend, but I did rehearse, because I told you guys last week, my new number. I rehearsed my new Christmas number, and then I actually had a photo shoot with this fashion blogger. She's a feminist fashion blogger here in the city. You guys can check her out at honeyandrouge.com. That's her fashion blog, which you can find me on in about 2 weeks from Monday that just passed, so about a week and a half.
honeyandrouge.com.
And again, you can also look up her Instagram if you just want to see some of, like, the photos that she takes. Really fun chick. Really fun. I can't wait to see. I have to send her my bio. Better get on it. But that's what I did this weekend. What about you?
Well, I was in drag Saturday and Sunday. I did on Saturday a fundraising event in Alameda County. Over in Oakland, it was my first time ever being to the new club B&B, and that club is lovely. And it's in downtown Oakland. It's like only a few blocks, really, walking distance from the Port Bar. So if you're in the East Bay, go check out the new club B&B, and it's right next to, or very much adjacent to, what is the other big club that's in downtown Oakland? They're like literally in the same building, club.
I have no idea.
Oh, shit. I'm trying to remember. It's slipping my mind.
Defension Bar?
Well, no. It's where Lulu Ramirez does her shows. And
I don't know the name of that club. I've seen video, but I have no idea what club that
is. Well, they're adjacent to one another. They're actually, I think, under the same ownership. It's a very lovely venue, and there's a whole new strip of little gay clubs and bars that are opening up in the same, within a short walk of each other. So it's very nice for people who live in the Oakland area, especially if they want to participate in the LGBTQ community over there. And Oakland now has an LGBTQ center as well.
Good for them.
So I was participating in that on Saturday. And then Sunday, I went to a variety of events. I went to Toy Drive at the San Francisco Eagle. That was hosted by Mr. San Francisco Leather 2016, Cody Bear. He did his toy drive there that afternoon. And then from there, we went over to Divas to see the crowning of the Imperial Council's Mr. and Miss Cowgirl for 2017.
Fabulous.
It was very fun. Oh, my God. I went in there, you guys, and I didn't really think about it, but I had gotten calls early that morning, and I'd woken up really, really early, and then I sort of just putzed around and then got ready and started my day of drag, and I hadn't eaten anything at all day. And I walked in and I started socializing or whatever. And then all of a sudden I started shaking and sweating profusely. And I realized I was having like a hypoglycemic attack because I hadn't eaten all day. So I have in front of us like this giant bag of animal crackers. I had to rush over and like get something with some sugar in it to settle me down. But it was a very nice time overall, and I want to thank Grand Duke Mad Dog 2020 for escorting me about that afternoon. The two of us went on our little rounds of the city and really had some fun time talking together and seeing a lot of familiar faces, all doing good causes for the community. So
fabulous.
Yep.
This weekend, you guys can catch both of us over at the Lookout for Carne Asada's brunch show, Lips and Lashes.
Yes.
Which starts at 12:30 or 1:30, I forget.
I think that actually, I think the show normally starts at 1:30, but this week it's been moved to 1 p.m., I believe, because SantaCon.
That's right. We're going to have all the Santas in town.
Girl, SantaCon is going to overflow the city with Santas on Saturday afternoon. So if
have your phones charged.
Yeah. If you are out and about enjoying some SantaCon and you want to see Pearl and me on stage, come on over to the Lookout. Be sure to bring some dollar bills and tip your hoes.
Right.
All right. Let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we will have with us one of our celebrity interviews. You are listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We'll be back in just a moment. This episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by Daddy's Barbershop, voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro, stop by to see Arlen, Jesse, and the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop, and be sure to tell them that Party Foul Radio sent you. GuideToGay.com is Australia's premier LGBTQ destination on the web. To stay abreast of everything that's happening in the LGBTQ world down under, visit GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com includes news, features, celebrity interviews, and coverage of Pride events from around the world. Visit GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
Hi, it's Rob Matthews, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
Hey, this is Delta Work, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, brought to you by Left Magazine.
Welcome back to Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Omar, and I'm excited to introduce our first guest this episode. Frank Music first emerged as both a solo artist being championed by Gaydar Radio in the UK in 2009 before going on to become an acclaimed remixer, working with such artists as Pet Shop Boys, Lady Gaga, Mika, and many, many more. More recently, he's collaborated with acts like Far East Movement. And in 2011, he produced the album Tomorrow's World for iconic 80s pop synth act Erasure, and twice in the last several years has appeared on music by RuPaul, among other artists. Frank Music most recently produced the single Wild Side for out recording artist from America's Got Talent, Brian Justin Crum, who appeared on a recent episode of Party Foul Radio. In covering that interview for the Huffington Post Queer Voices, I incorrectly stated that Frank Music is a out gay artist, and he very gently corrected me and then agreed to be on our podcast. So at this time, it's my pleasure to welcome to Party Foul Radio, Mr. Frank Music.
Hello.
Hello. Are you ready for our interview?
I'm so ready.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me, even after I incorrectly reported that you were an out artist in my Brian
That's
Justin.
All right.
My
I think everyone thinks I'm gay, even when I say I'm not. They're like, no, he's gay. He just doesn't know he's gay.
I incorrectly thought that you were, and you were out and open, because I know you've posed naked in a gay publication before.
And, yeah.
And all of the artists that I've really followed your work in association with are either, like, iconic gay artists like Pet Shop Boys and Erasure and RuPaul, or newer gay artists like Brian Justin Crum.
Yes, no, it's fine. The thing is, it's kind of interesting to me how when I was growing up, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 32 now, and when I was a kid, it was like David Bowie, Prince, and all these people who were just allowed to be gay or straight, that they were just like men singing music in whichever way they want. But now it's like, oh, if you're a guy and you sing sort of above a certain note and enjoy it, you must be gay. And it's kind of weird how we've regressed in that way. Like back in the day, you didn't really care what sexuality any pop star was. you know, no one liked George Michael because he was gay or straight. People just liked George Michael because he was fucking adorable. And then it came out that he was gay. But I feel like now we're just boxing things more and more. Not, by the way, there's no critique of you. I'm just, like, talking in general. You're going to regret doing this interview because I love talking to strangers. You know, and now it's like, is he gay or is he straight? It's, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it shouldn't really matter because it mattered less, like, 30 years ago, I feel.
I think it's adorable that you wondered if I was as old as you at 32. I'll be 45 in January, and...
Hey!
And what I recall...
The makeup's working, clearly.
What was the makeup and moisture program, like, you know, moisturizing and...
That is the key, right? Moisturizing every day. I've been doing it since I was, like, 18. As soon as I got rid of my acne, because you can't use moisturizer when you've got a greasy face. But when my greasy face stops... Yes, absolutely. That is the key. And if you don't do it from an early age, there's no going back.
Well, I think that the real key is moisturizing over top of the Botox, because that has worked so well for me.
You're definitely taking it one step further than I could possibly dare to go.
Oh, wait another 10 years. You'll be questioning that. Anyway, but what I was going to say is that I recall, like, all of the artists that you mentioned... At the height of their popularity, there was always speculation of their sexuality. And I think that the difference is that during many of the generations previous, people would not come out because it was seen as like a career killer.
Yes. Well, I mean, definitely when I've... So, like, you mentioned you interviewed Andy Bell previously, right?
Oh, yes, several times, and I love him.
I've had some pretty candid conversations with him in the past regarding, you know, the earlier times in his career. And, you know, you can find on YouTube videos of him being booed on stage in certain countries. I can't remember which countries they were, but, like, you know, because he did come out, sort of thing. And but I suppose what I mean is, back in the day, I feel there was this unspoken kind of, like, he or she probably is, but it's like it comes with the territory. That's why they're a musician. Because that's kind of why I've always been drawn to, you know, the gay community. It's associated with pretty much positive things, apart from the sort of stereotype, sort of catty queeniness stuff, which is generally hyperbolic anyway. But gay culture is really kind of enshrined in a bunch of positive attributes, generally leaning sort of creative avenues.
Absolutely.
And so I think that sort of there used to be the veil of creative androgyny that with the rise of the internet and, you know, the fact that everything has become more transparent, you know, it's more of an open conversation. But I liked it not knowing, not because of course I didn't want to know if people were gay or straight, but I like not knowing because it let the music do the talking. Like, it was so fun, like, with David Bowie, because it was like he was trying to be post-gender, post-sexuality almost. It was an act, and you didn't know where the act stopped and where the real person began. And with the internet and just no privacy, you just don't have that with any celebrity or artist really anymore, you know, apart from maybe, like, Shia LaBeouf. Because I don't think Shia LaBeouf knows where he begins or ends these days.
I do think benefit of that era, it allowed accessibility for an artist play to all audiences. I do think that while being out now is not a career killer in the way that it might have been previously, I recognize that it pigeonholes an artist. And people, for example, like Andy Bell, talk about an era of his career when he was considered a pop star, and now he is seen as like a niche act for the gay community.
So annoying.
Yeah, it's very annoying because musically, he's wild. I mean, he's just so talented. I mean, as somebody that I'm a longtime fan of and just as a really candid, wonderful person, I don't know whether it's because he has aged out of what is considered pop music or because of the fact that he is open about his sexuality or his HIV status or any of those things that causes him to be able to play to a lesser audience necessarily. But it does frustrate...
Well, I think it's sorry, Karen.
I love that you said carry on, because to me that is something that is so condescending, but you're British and
I'm very condescending, that's for sure. Well, I'm naturally so.
It's got that British accent, it just sounds so cute to Americans.
Sometimes. Depends which British accent, there's quite a few, and some of them are a little bit scarier than others.
That is true. It's like American accents.
I agree with what you're saying about Andy entirely. It's a very interesting point. In an age where we have the plethora of information at our fingertips and on our phones, we are finding ourselves, cornering ourselves almost into our own niches. So I don't think anything's changed with Andy in terms of, you know, the songs are still globally amazing pop songs. You know, when I was a kid, if you wanted to, you know, whatever your hobby was or whatever you were trying to be into, you had to wait for that monthly magazine subscription. You had to go to the town center and, you know, cut up some jeans or something like that, you know. Now it's, you can go on the internet and be whatever you want and think whatever you want instantly without any, having to rely on anyone else. You can just sort of go into your own sort of mind ghetto, as I like to call it. So you can just be in your own little hole, and things have lost a lot of power. So I think music in the West has lost a lot of power with the advent of the internet. I don't think music means as much to people anymore because it's so free. It's so, and by the way, I don't care about people downloading music. It's just, you know, it's like water. We don't care about water like countries where water is scarce. Music is not scarce. Music is easily producible now at a very cheap price. When you have someone like Andy, I think him coming out and his HIV positive stories and just sort of the way that he presents himself, it's what it's doing to the other person. I don't think it's what he's done at all. I'm not saying that's what you're saying either, but it's just, it's more about us than does about him. And I think we are all, in the age of the internet, we are trying to be our own gatekeepers of everything. You know, whereas before the magazine subscription would be the gatekeeper for you, you know, as to whatever hobby or, you know, you're into. And they would tell you what, you know, what is good and what's hip and what isn't, like the music magazines and stuff. Now you can go out there and you could be into something for 1 week and be completely out of it the next. And you have little commitment to it or emotional attachment because you didn't have to wait, you know, 30 days for the next magazine to come through or stuff like that. And someone like Andy, this is so sad, is the music matters less than his life choices. And that's depressing, you know, because there's plenty of artists out there who, you know, have, you know, whatever their personal life is. Most of them you don't know, and you only care about the music, you know, or the art, as it were. And the same can be said for politicians, is what they do rather than what they do behind closed doors that matters. And so, you know, with Andy, he's been very candid with me in the past too. And it's very disarming as well when someone's that vulnerable and open. And I think it intimidates a lot of people. And some people, when they're intimidated by such openness, because they themselves know they can't be that open, the sort of the natural reaction is to sort of shun that person to make yourself feel better about the fact that you are weaker than that. You are not strong enough to be that open, especially about such hard topics as, you know, HIV and, you know, coming out back in the, you know, late 80s as well.
What you have said has made me think of a variety of things. The way things have changed regarding releases of music via the internet and downloads, the idea of a powerful single, for example, is so much less. The artists now have 5 songs out at any given time versus when I was growing up. I mean, we still see it. I mean, like Despacito or Havana, those are on the air all the time, and they're still powerful singles. But when I was growing up, every song was that. I mean, they didn't put out a new song until everyone was literally completely over.
Absolutely.
And now music is so much more throwaway.
There's a few things to unpack there. So you have the consumer and then you have the industry. And right now, the industry is completely infantilized. You have just morons running the industry. You would never see an Apple run its business the way the music industry runs its business. You don't need to be, for a start, a musician to work in the music industry. You need to be a product manager. You need to be someone who's a good administrator. There is zero creativity in working in the music industry. The term A&R man, which is artist and repertoire for your audience, is the person that would craft the art, as in you'd put the singer with the right producers, the right engineers, and what have you. That role is completely dissolved in the modern music industry. And that's sad because there needs to be people, just like a car, you know, a car company doesn't not hire, you know, car designers. And to some degree, the car industry has gone through a similar thing where instead of designing cars for people, all they're doing is asking people what they want to see with market research. It's just market research. But you and me, we don't know what a car should look like. We didn't study in what cars should look like. I want a car industry to show me something I haven't seen before. I want a music industry to play me something I haven't heard before. And the last time I felt that really happened, weirdly, in its entirety, was actually Skrillex with dubstep. We haven't seen a complete turning on the head of an industry quite like... And by the way, I'm not like a huge fan of dubstep or anything. It was just seeing an artist flip the script entirely on a genre and stuff. And you know, and it just totally highlighted the complete inadequacy of what used to be the leaders, which is the industry, telling us what and showing us artists that we hadn't found or discovered. And then, you know, the new world we live in where the producer engineer is one guy in his bedroom or living room or whatever, and is showing the industry what they don't know because they had got rid of A&R. They're not looking out for new talent that's undiscovered. All they're doing is cashing in on talent that's already making money at a certain level, and then they come in for the scaling and maximize on the money that they can make off the back of it, you know, which is by supplying the marketing money. Then you have the consumer. And this is really interesting because I think the advent of things like America's Got Talent and X Factor, it's created this false sense that the public, they are like Simon Cowell. They think when they're watching TV shows like this, they know talent when they see it. And they can sort of, I've seen it. You just see people sitting down watching X Factor or America's Got Talent, like, oh, yeah, that person's crap, oh, that person's good. And the whole thing's a joke anyway. We now all think that we're like, we've got a little Simon Cowell on our shoulder who, you know, we know good music when we hear it. So we have the old gatekeepers not creating talent, you know, the A&R. And then you have the whole public who thinks they know what talent is with zero educational skill in the areas that we're talking about. And that creates, if that was in any other industry, like, you know, iPhones, the Apple wasn't making iPhones and then every single person thought they knew how to make an iPhone, we would have the crappiest phones on earth. And that's depressing. And that's what's happened to the music industry. And they're completely neolithic when it comes to trying to understand the internet. All they've done is fight the internet instead of embrace it and take it on. And then it took Apple, you know, a completely separate company, like a technology company, to show the record industry how to run a music business by, you know, setting up iTunes and then Apple Music. It's weird watching the teacher become the student, and it's interesting watching the public really kind of be very clueless but think it knows everything at the same time, because they can choose what they want rather than being told what to listen to as well. And that compounded with the Simon Cowell thing is kind of dangerous. And then on the one last thing on the subject of the music industry is you have not really any direction with where are we going with music? You know, if the industry is clueless, and then you've got the public who, you know, then you have these weird enclaves, which gets back to the mind ghetto thing that I was talking about earlier, where I googled Spotify, what's the most played genre of music on Spotify? And to my shock, I think it was like, you know, like electronic music or something for Spotify. It was actually heavy metal. So there's a whole audience out there that's being completely not catered for by, you know, the record industry. The most popular genre is heavy metal on Spotify. And no one knows that. I can guarantee nobody knows. I've asked tons of music industry people like that question, and they have no idea. So the music industry isn't even looking at a statistic like that and being like, oh, we should make heavy metal again, because there's clearly people out there who want it. They're only marketing music to children. And when we were younger, this is the last thing I'll say before I finish the lecture, is do you remember when music was made for adults by adults? I mean, yes, you had the Beatles and stuff like that, you know, which had, you know, fanatical, you know, juvenile fans. But, you know, on the whole, music was made by grown-ups, and it was a grown-up thing. Adults have been totally abandoned by the record industry. And the only way the record industry wants anything to do with adults is adults that are willing to spend money on their children. And that's also depressing because it's losing a lot of its sophistication. And it's about a bottom line. I know it's the record industry has always been about a bottom line and, you know, artist exploitation and all that, but it feels so utterly transparent at this point.
Well, I think that it makes perfect sense to me that the number one genre on Spotify would be a genre that is not readily accessible to the general public. I mean, there's, you know, if you want electronic music, there's so many ways to find that. And, yeah. Or if you want pop music, there's so many ways to find that. I don't even use Spotify, so that shows how old I am, but...
I don't either, actually. I'm on it, but I don't use it.
But, you know, I definitely think that that makes sense, because if you want to find a certain type of music that is not readily accessible, that's why a product like Spotify is so perfect for you.
It seems weird, though, because Spotify don't embrace that themselves. If you ever, you know, were to go on the homepage or anything, they are absolutely not promoting any guitar-based music, which, I mean, it's just so interesting to me. I say this all the time. What we would have classed as a remix, you know, back in the 90s, like an EDM, or as we would have said, dance music remix back in the day, is now the actual single, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's just so weird. I think the one that really got me recently was the Coldplay Chainsmokers song.
Yes.
And it's something like this, whatever. This is hilarious. This is an unfinished Coldplay song that's been remixed by Chainsmokers, and it's being called a fucking song by Coldplay. I'm actually one of the rare few people who has not sort of got an unbridled hatred towards Coldplay for some reason, because I should hate them. But I think Chris Martin's actually quite a talented chap. I don't think they deserve all the hate they get, but that was weird. And that to me was just a complete sign of, it's like the Maroon 5 band. And how you can possibly turn around to anyone in a bar and say that you're the backing band for Maroon 5 is hilarious. I wouldn't have the balls to do it, because you're not doing anything anymore. I mean, it's just Adam Levine and then a producer, and then they stand in for the photographs. I mean, they're not a band. There's no bands anymore. People talk about bands, but they're not really bands. They're not like Rage Against the Machine. It's like a front guy. The other guys with beards stand behind them in the videos, but then really it's, you know, Dr. Luke or whoever producing the beat, as it were. The producer's the new band, but we still, like, we talk about boy bands. The most annoying phrase ever. None of them play instruments. Okay, they sing, but they don't really play, like, band instruments. It's a band of boys. That's what they should call it. A band of merry men.
Well,
young men.
I am a fan of Maroon 5, and I'm not saying that you are saying that you're not, but I'm a fan of Maroon 5 largely because I like Adam Levine's voice. I like Adam Levine. But the newer music that I've heard from them, one of the things that I noted as soon as the new album dropped is they no longer sound like Maroon 5 whatsoever. They sound like Adam Levine singing over various other things. All of the rock elements of their music
Absolutely
are gone.
Right.
I mean, the new
it's
single...
It's about Jane. It's not that. You know, it's not guitar-driven or piano-driven music. It's all produced stuff.
Yeah, it. I mean...
By produced, I mean like beat-driven.
Yeah, the new single with SZA doesn't sound... There's not a live instrument in it anywhere. So I'm like, what does the band do?
That's what I mean. And the public don't care. That's the other thing that sort of baffles me. I mean, we're discussing it now, but we care more 100% than anyone else. It saddens me that, I suppose, real life gets in the way, and I've never actually fully grown up. But for everyone else, you know, music becomes really not so much of an issue for a majority of adults. They sort of stick with a certain enclave of music that they remember growing up in their sort of formative years of their teens, and then they kind of stick with it through the rest of their life. Whereas, of course, you and I are probably a lot more passionate about music than, say, a regular adult would be. But it's sad to see sort of people, you know, just left behind, I guess.
I wake up on Tuesday mornings and I go to Billboard magazine's charts, because they refresh on Tuesdays, and I look through the whole charts, like pretty much every chart, to find new music
that I haven't heard. I mean, that's like, that's what how I discover artists. That's how I continue feeding my longtime love for music. But what I will tell you, and this should not be the case, there are months at a time often where I cannot discover one new song that either doesn't feel like a song I've already heard a million times, or that interests me at all. Like, I do think that there is a real lack of new music, specifically over the last several months, that has had any real appeal for me. And, you know, that happens months at a time on occasion. And then we'll get five new songs that come out simultaneously, it feels like, and I'll be okay for a little bit. But
two sides to that. There's two sides. You said something at the beginning of that, the statement, which was, you know, I go on Billboard and I look at the top, whatever. There's other people who do that too, and I've been in the room while they do it. The other people that go through that same process are the fucking producers and songwriters. They are going to look at the top 10, and they're trying to repackage,
replicate that sound. Yeah.
What is already there, and it is heartbreaking, and it is maddening to me that this happens, where there's this sort of complete creative black hole. And of course, there are people out there who do art for the sake of art, and there are people out there who do art to make money. And I'm not going to be one of these cliche people who say, you know, you shouldn't be trying to make money from art, because I'm doing it too. But at that level, where, you know, people say, well, imitation is sort of the highest form of flattery. So, but when you just outright
that's not true.
Think of your own ideas, it's just moronic. There was a second point to what you said, but I've forgotten it. But that's right. So the other side of that is the radio industry, which I despise with a passion. I used to hate going into radio stations, the sycophants. It's so gross to me. I sound like such a judgmental prick. It's because I am. And you go into a radio station, and these people are fully grown adults who are claiming to be DJs, who have never once had an original decision in that job ever. They are told what to do. They are told what to play.
Yeah.
And we kind of go along with it. Certain DJ, Radio One, is acting like he's the tastemaker of whatever. And he's being told by a committee of people what to play. And he's just the front man for the next few years before he'll be replaced as a younger, prettier model to do the same job. And it's just bizarre to me. Anyway, getting off a little bit there, the point that I was trying to make is, aside from hating the radio industry, on the back end is the front end, which is their playlisting. I mean, I did some research into Kiss 100 recently about how often does Drake play on Kiss in Los Angeles? So their playlist was 14 songs. That's just insane to me.
You just hit on one of the things that irritates the shit out of me. These radio stations are listed as being top 40, right? But at most, they have 20 songs on their playlist. Yes, I know that audience demand is high for certain songs, but there's no reason that I should hear whatever is in the top 10 twice in 1 hour. There's all the, you know, there's so many other songs.
Absolutely agree.
Oh.
It's all fear-driven. And there's this brilliant cartoon, ironically done by the BBC. I don't know if they realize that they're having the piss taken out of themselves, but this cartoonist did this brilliant sort of thing about the music industry. It's sort of like a 5-minute sort of funny animation about the record industry. And, you know, it just deals with that point entirely, which is, you know, we are the brain-dead masses. In this comic strip, they play the song to this random guy, you know, and he's like, it's like the worst song ever. And it's like, play one. It's like, I fucking hate it. Play two. I still hate it. Play three. I mean, I've got used to it now. I'm starting to get the melody. Play four. I love it. I'm going to tell all my friends. I don't want to get all sort of like InfoWars-y, but it's kind of just brainwashing. I think it's brain-dead people working at the radio stations who are like, we don't care enough to play other people, and we're too scared to take risks, and we don't want to alienate anyone by playing anything that's a little bit out there. Then you have the audience who are like, please don't scare us. I want the same thing with different words.
Yeah, there's... And you can see that, and you can feel that in music. I mean, they'll add something to a song, like an instrumentation to a song. And this happened a number of years ago. It happened with a song by Jason Derulo, and it had a horn section. And then
yes.
2 months later, or less than 2 months later, that same horn section popped up in a song by Fifth Harmony. Okay, so obviously it worked once. We're going to do it again. You know what I mean? That's the mentality.
Yeah, Ariana Grande. You have writing camps. I mean, the record industry has been doing writing camps for the last few decades properly. I mean, back in the day you had Motown and stuff where you had a bunch of writers and stuff, but sort of on a global level where a record publishing company would hire a hotel and, invite 50 songwriters to just write. And these songwriters are also generally laptop producers as well. They have some degree of, production skills, because you kind of need to be able to be more than just a songwriter these days. These people are in one tiny agar plate of music making. If you know anything about the music industry, you can name the top two record producers, which was once, Dr. Luke and the other guy, what's his name? I've already forgotten it. The guy who did Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys back in the day. What's his name, Christina? The other guy who's huge, and it's ironic, because they're the only two, but I can't remember his second name. It'll come to me on a moment. Max Martin.
Yes.
Max Martin and Dr. Luke. No, you're fine. And, it's those are the producers, and then you have the sort of the hilarious hybrid producers that people don't even realize are producers because everyone calls them DJs, which people like Calvin Harris, who are actually, proficient producers in terms of their creating artists and artist records like Rihanna and stuff. But we have this sort of weird thing where it's like, as soon as you stand behind, two disc-shaped machines, then you're a DJ. But, Max Martin and Calvin Harris pretty much have the same job. It's just, Calvin goes one extra step and parties in Vegas, for a living. But they are theoretically doing the same thing.
Sorry. That was hilarious.
That's fine.
That was hilarious. That was a very... No wonder people think you're gay. That was a very shady read. I love that.
Oh, God, everyone thinks I hate Calvin Harris. I'm only jealous of his height. That's about it. He's very tall. I wish I was as tall as him.
I heard this reworking by Shoshana Bean and a group of individuals of a Taylor Swift song. And it's with live instruments, and they turned it into this sort of smoky... It just popped up on my Facebook yesterday, and I listened to it all afternoon on repeat. It is so good because it's so different. It sounds a little bit like Somebody I Used to Know by Gautier and Kimbra, the way they've arranged it. But it's so refreshing. Just when something new sounding comes across my internet or something, I jump on it because I'm so tired of what I've heard. The sounds of the artists that I'm hearing today, and it's always been the case in the industry, if it works once, then find another artist for a different label to do the same sound and capitalize while we can, kind of thing. But it is so refreshing to hear something that sounds different.
There's a really boring, generic reason as well that you probably aren't aware of why you feel that way. The one thing that you said that was really interesting to me was you said it was kind of like Gautier. It's sort of a smoky sort of, I haven't heard it, but it's acoustic driven, I'm guessing. It's with live instruments, that you said, right?
Yes. Cello and a violin and vocal.
So what you're also experiencing is ear fatigue. Not just in the sort of, I'm listening to the same style of music, or it's also down to the actual sound. The music is so heavily compressed. Now, no one outside of industry really knows what that means, but the modern pop production, there is what's called the loudness war, where all this sort of synth, computer-driven music is so heavily engineered, it's so completely flatlined. And if you were to look at the waveform of, the original Taylor Swift song, it's what we call duct taped. So generally, it it will just look like the wave file will be just like a block, a long strip. Whereas if you were to look at the waveform, probably of the Gautier-style track that you're talking about, it's got the sort of the ebbs and flows, the peaks and troughs. And that's dynamic range. Now, I don't want to lose people here, but it's really important because the thing that makes music like that so appealing is your ear has the opportunity to rest on occasions. There's a quiet moment. There's what you know, dynamism. You know, people. We always talk about in the industry like, you know, tension and release. But we're thinking about phrases. So we're like, we want the tension in the pre-chorus before we have the release in the chorus itself. But that can also apply to the sound engineering. No one does dynamic range in modern pop music. It's just loud from start to finish. There's no moments where your ear can just go down for a second. Like orchestral music, there is that dynamism. There is movement, not just in what the notes are doing, but in what the sound is doing, the volume of things. And we've completely forgotten that. The radio industry had to forget that because the way that radio stations are set up is that they're heavily compressed. They have these giant, like, compressing machines that cost an absolute fortune just to slam the bandwidth so they can get the music as loud as possible. And that is hurting our ears. It's deafening us, not just, you know, literally, but it's making us lose interest in the music because it doesn't move you. There's not that movement sonically. Another lecture. I keep on lecturing you. I'm so sorry.
I don't mind a good lecture. I am a student of the industry, and one of the reasons why I love talking to people who are involved in industries that I love and admire is because of the fact it educates me. You know, as a result, it educates listeners. And one of the, you know, cornerstones of when I started my podcast was to educate, entertain, and inform. You know, we want to present people who have perspectives that could enlighten people, or in this case, you may have given a listener out there an understanding of what it is they've experienced without having a term for it. You know, like, what is it that's going on with this? Oh, that's what it is.
Articulation is so important. And this is the one thing this is why we need more experts in things, because articulation, especially with the way the world is today, but that's what it's supposed throughout time, actually. It's having people who can articulate. Like you and I, we could never be ice cream tasters. Now, we could eat ice cream all day long, right? But we couldn't actually work at an ice cream company and communicate to the makers of this ice cream what is a good batch of ice cream and what isn't. We could be like, yeah, that's okay, that one's not. That's, you know what I mean?
Right.
But there is someone out there whose job it is to professionally every day and, you know, go into a factory and taste ice cream. And they've learned the dialect. They know how to communicate with people. And if you're trying to create, this is what's great about what you're doing. It's like, we need people to be honest for a start, and we need people to know what the hell they're talking about in everything. It doesn't matter what it is.
What you have described as being an ability to articulate terminology, feelings, emotions is very specific, and I think that it comes with having a great deal of exposure to and a level of expertise in whatever field you're in. I have a greater ability to articulate certain things than I do. I mean, with makeup, for example, I can look at somebody's makeup, yes, and say, you know, somebody else would be like, oh, she's okay. And I'd be like, well, this is done well. This is too light. That's too dark. It muddies what you're seeing, because I have years of expertise in that area through my own practice. And
right.
As opposed to a casual viewer, or they sum it up, and I tell my friends all the time, okay or fine are not ways to accurately articulate a situation. Oh, this was okay. Well, why just okay? If you put it into words.
Yeah, that's not an answer.
You are talking about and expressing a level of frustration with the industry and the production elements of the industry. You are a music producer. So how does that clash with your end game of wanting to produce music?
I don't make hits. That's how. Because as soon as I hear something that's already happened, there's something in my brain that stops me from copying it. So I'm the complete opposite of how to be a modern-day music producer. You listen to, like I did the other night, Prince's "You Don't Have to Be Rich to Be My Girl," whatever. I don't know what the name of that song is.
Kiss.
And
it's called Kiss.
That song is like nothing else, right? And I'm not a huge Prince fan. The song is fucking ridiculous. I was saying to my partner the other day, it's like the backing band were like Everyone was doing their job correctly apart from Prince on that song. It was like all the backing singers are like tight and on the button. The music is tight and clean. And then Prince, it sounds like he's doing like a ridiculous cover of someone else's song because he's just like wailing all over it. But that's Prince. He paid for the real musicians to show up and do their job correctly. And then it was Prince's job to have those, like, just be completely candid and be completely Prince. And that candidness, you just don't experience really in music at all anymore. There's no risk taking at all levels. I mean, there's a little bit here and there. That's what I thought was so great about Skrillex. It was like, he obviously didn't expect, you know, to get the, you know, tsunami of success that, you know, that waved over him. And quite rightly so. But no one is going into the industry to break the rules or anything anymore. I think that's the one sad thing that's happened in a lot of creative industries. No one is breaking rules. Madonna likes to think she's breaking rules by, you know, saying silly things all the time in interviews. But, I mean, for real, breaking the rules. No, you know, there is no punk rock in pop music. And it's also not being popularized. There is no rise up against. And it's just so weird for me because you'd think in the advent of the internet there would be more rebellion. You know, there'll be more people sort of musically expressing the music industry is shit and we need to do something about it and put that in a song like, you know, Rage Against the Machine or Sex Pistols. I mean, you know, my goodness, do you think we're ever going to have a Sex Pistols again? Is that ever going to happen? No. We're so soft now, I feel. And that's really frustrating. I'm not saying that all music needs to be angry and shouty or anything like that. Because, my God, I cannot stand emo music. A bunch of privileged people complaining about their privileged lives they have. But I don't know where we go sort of with music production because I think that everyone's got a lot of things wrong. That's why I'm doing less of it, by the way. I'm producing less music and I'm getting more into scoring. And soundtrack stuff because now I'm sort of in a sort of happy long-term relationship. My sort of the tropes that I used to go to for my solo projects were sort of like heartbreak and stuff like that. And so I'm happy now, and I'm not going to be a smug prick and write happy songs that a lot of people probably don't want to hear unless they're coming out of Pharrell Williams' mouth. Pardon me, but. You know, with the rest of the industry, I don't know. I think it's just all fear. I think everyone's trying to make a quick buck. There's a lot of people who are in the industry 1 minute and they're out the next. Because anyone can pick up a laptop. You know, the laptop is the new guitar. In the 80s, there was a million bazillion kids who were trying to become Metallica or Guns N' Roses. And you see them now as 40-year-old men wearing Guns N' Roses t-shirts, you know, in bars.
Those are my fraternity brothers. Leave them alone.
Oh, Guns N' Roses is fine. They're amazing. Don't get me wrong. Look what they did. Look what they managed to create. Like a million kids who wanted to be like them.
Totally.
That was the thing. The technology was cheap enough to make people think that. Like, you could go and buy some makeup, but you won't be able to do your makeup like Willem anytime soon, ever. You know, and this is the other thing. We've got to stop pretending that we're all good at the same things. There are some people who are like absolutely brilliant. I'm not ever going to be a brilliant record producer because I think too much. I'm like constantly terrified about making a sound that I recognize on another record. I mean, look what's happening to someone like Ed Sheeran. He's just getting sued left and right because he can't write songs that aren't other people's. I'm not saying he's doing that deliberately, but I don't want to be in that industry anymore. If every great song's been written, like, I know that I've never made a song that's beaten any of my favorite Electric Light Orchestra records. You know, that's my job. You know, so that tells me something. It's like, well, I'd rather go and do something where I feel like I stand a chance. Because I feel that all the best songs, you know, everyone pretty much could have stopped making music, pop music, like classic songs, after Whitney Houston Bodyguard album. I'm not kidding. This is one of the most incredible albums of all time. And, you know, if you want, like, the combination of incredible, or like Michael Jackson's Thriller, just in terms of all the people who are involved in that, just the pedigree of talent from top to bottom, the care, and, you know, that everyone had in that, and just you just don't have that anymore. And that's not me trying to be rose-tinted glasses. Of course, there's a lot of bullshit, and like Whitney Houston died of, you know, drug overdose or whatever. Obviously, she wasn't a happy person. That sucks. But Taylor Swift is Taylor Swift because she's a multimillionaire. You know, she's Taylor Swift. Yes, she has some good songs, but she pays a lot of people to shut up as well, who were probably involved in songwriting at some level, who get paid off to not be credited. You know, this is someone who had to have their father buy a record label she couldn't get signed to. Now, that's the world we live in now. You know, the amount of blogs where my music is being put on the same list as someone as Beyonce or a Taylor Swift, you know, list. And it's like, but no one is factoring in the infrastructure behind either of those artists. You know, when you say independent artist, Taylor Swift was an independent artist when she bought the record label she was signed to. But no one talks about that because it's, everyone wants to assume that talent is with these people, not just millions of dollars. And we don't want to think about it because we don't want our favorite artist to just be someone who's the sort of food equivalent of McDonald's, you know. And don't get me wrong, Taylor Swift is fine. There's nothing wrong with her music. I just wish she was honest, you know, and with Beyonce. It's like there's just, and why would I want to, you know, compete with that infrastructure when it's never in a million years, even if I had $1 million, why would I spend $100,000 on a music video? You know, my ego is not that big. So there's a lot of things that need to change in the industry, and I just think that we need to sort of get democratized ourselves a little bit more, and we need to get behind artists that we genuinely care about. People need to care about music again. You know, like, we don't care about water. As I said at the beginning, we don't care about artists. We only care about Taylor Swift because we're constantly, and I see UPS trucks at the top of my street with her face on the side of it, and it says, take a picture of Taylor Swift. I'm being told to take a picture of Taylor Swift on the side of a UPS van in Glendale. Like, what? Like, what has that got to do with fucking music? And I'm a male, I'm not a male because fuck that, I'm a male, but I'm theoretically a pop singer. And I'm looking at someone who does the same job as me. That's like an electrician driving past, like, Enron and being like, look, you guys are the same. You do the same job, right? You create power. It's like, no, it's not really the same. So for me, it's like, it's a mountain that I'm not, I just look at the mountain from a distance and I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That mountain's fine over there and I'm good right over here. That's why I left, you know, the record industry sort of and went independent deliberately in the first place.
I have heard from many artists that it's definitely a dual-edged sword of being signed to a major label because one of the things that you've described is this idea that whatever it is about you that's appealing enough to a label to get you signed then goes through an entire process where they want to streamline it for the masses as opposed to finding a way to allow a person's personality and originality to be the selling point and then taking it upon themselves to sell it.
I'd say 10 years ago that was absolutely the case. So I don't even think they bother doing that anymore. I would totally agree with that statement. When the internet wasn't as sort of as a fledgling, it was more of a fledgling thing than it is now, which is the internet's more established than the record industry. Now the record industry finds something that's already fully established and has already got, like, you know, 2 million hits on YouTube videos, sort of like a, you know, a Latin American sort of hot, spicy, you know, 19-year-old boy who's, you know, got a little bit of financing, private capital from parents, you know, and got a good producer and just looks great on camera and, you know, they funded it themselves and then, you know, record label shows up at the very end of the process and says, well, thank you for doing all the hard work that we're supposed to do. Now, can we give you the last, you know, 10 million for the marketing and we'll try and, you know, scrape a 2 million profit off the top of that. That's what it is now. Back then, they were signing weirdos like me, you know, from, you know, crappy towns in South London. And taking risks, taking gambles. Yeah, I think record labels are brilliant at giving people money that they shouldn't be giving money to. They should never have given me a record deal in a million years. By today's standards, I used to be quite bitter about the whole experience with record labels, but I look back on it now and I'm like, I'm so grateful that I got shafted left and right by people. But on the whole, it's like, what an incredible opportunity. Now, it's up to you how far you want to take that. I could have played the game way more than I did. You know, I could have totally done that, but I was mouthy. You can hear how I am. I'm pretty blunt, and I don't mince my words. and to some degree, you've got to play the game. And I'm such a loner, generally. Then you thrust me into a sort of a giant conglomerate like that. A lot of artists, getting back to your original point about, you know, you sort of purify the art, you know, you cleanse it for the masses. I would, of course, agree with that if you're someone who doesn't say no. And I didn't say no. I kind of went, I was like, well, these are the record. This is the record label. This is what happens, right? You know, and if you do say no, then you have the potential of being shelved. There is a power structure in place in these labels. They've lost a lot of that power since then. You know, to some degree, you know, two rich parents funding their, you know, daughter or son's, you know, dreams to be a pop singer, if done well, yeah, I mean, the record label can step in with a checkbook. And, if, you know, as I said earlier, which is there is no particular creative drive, driver in the record industry anymore. The creatives on the sort of the business side have disappeared. Well, then, at least if it's privately funded creativity, that then can be brought to the masses by their checkbook and they're not dirtying the creativity as much, then that's good, I guess. You know, that's the one thing that has helped with the internet and the music industry is it's brought power and, you know, more affordable technology. The record label used to own the technology, you know, EMI Studios, there's, you know, EMI owned, made mixing consoles and things like that, you know, RCA made magnetic tape for recording the masters. They owned the technology. We own the technology now. We don't necessarily own the talent, but we own, you know, you and I, we know how to probably do a little bit of Photoshop, a little bit of, you know, this, a little bit of that on a computer like a million other people do. The record label doesn't control that aspect of it so much anymore.
Well, Frank, I appreciate, I guess I should call you Vincent. Vincent, I appreciate you talking today, and I really feel enlightened by your perspective. And I think that...
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's valuable. And I, again, especially after what some artists could have taken as a complete faux pas of outing you when you're not out and outing you when you're not gay, that could have been taken by some people as really, I don't know, offensive. And I appreciate not only you being so easygoing about it, but actually talking to us and talking to me, even in the wake of that.
Well, my biggest thing that I try and learn now I'm in my 30s is to be less of a hypocrite. And I want to be as intellectually honest and balanced in everything. And I want to live in a world where we are post-sexuality, post-racial. We just are people with ideas, and we help each other as best as we can. And the labels kind of disappear. So if I was to get a stick up my ass about someone accidentally, you know, outing me, I mean, that doesn't say a lot for my principles.
Well, I do appreciate that, and thank you for joining us. Listeners, that was music producer Frank Music joining us to talk about his experience in the record industry. Follow him on social media. It's at Frank Music, FrankMusik. Frank Music. Check him out, and you can find him, as I mentioned, on two tracks by RuPaul, Fly Again being one of them from her recent album. And he produced the 2011 Erasure album, Tomorrow's World. Check him out and support the artists who support us. I will tell you that I'm going to be saving another portion of this interview for our post-Christmas episode. Frank and I continue to go on, but we get really in-depth, and I've chosen to hold that for you guys. Close out the end of the year with a big bang. We will have Frank Music back on with us in approximately two episodes. I am Poyo Del Mar. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. And we will be back with more on this episode, including our interview with Broadway legend Shoshana Bean. Shoshana's career hit heights that most artists and entertainers only dream of when she replaced Idina Menzel in the Broadway production of Wicked. Now, as a pop artist, she has a new album coming out in 2018 titled Spectrum. But even as you listened to this podcast, her duet with Tony Award-winning actress Cynthia Erivo covering Taylor Swift's I Did Something Bad is blowing up the internet. Everyone from Billboard magazine to major fashion publications, and including Taylor Swift herself, are talking about this beautiful duet of a song from Taylor Swift's latest album, Reputation. When we come back, we will have with us Miss Shoshana Bean to discuss that, her Broadway career, and much, much more. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants makes the perfect stocking stuffer this holiday season. Swiss Navy's full line of premium silicone water-based lubricants, as well as other items relating to your sexual needs, will go perfectly under any tree. And if you want to stuff my stockings, be sure to use Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricant. My name is Poyo Del Mar, and I approve this message. With its in-depth celebrity interviews, news, opinion, gorgeous photo pictorials, and coverage of all of the LGBTQ events in Northern California, Left Magazine is San Francisco's favorite queer nightlife publication. Pick up your copy of Left Magazine today in the Castro or visit them online. Left Magazine is available at liveleft.com. That's liveleft.com.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson. I'm hanging out with Party Foul Radio.
Hi, it's Shoshana Bean.
I am so excited, Shoshana. This is very exciting. The reason it's so exciting is because it's not often that I become obsessed with a song and within 3 days am able to actually speak to the performer. So this is this might be a record for me.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you. It's an honor.
Before we can even talk about the song, I'm just going to quote this tweet that you got from Amber Riley, and she said, "Don't you ever just sit there snatched, not one move one muscle and casually slay a song like this. Who does that?"
That's my girl.
Yeah, before we can even talk about the song, like, you guys, well, it's all four of you women, you were just, as Amber said, just snatched. So who did your makeup?
Oh, my girl Vanessa Ortiz. She's been doing my makeup for a couple years now, and then she did Cynthia as well on the day.
Oh my gosh. I think that honestly the your rendition of the song is so good, but the way you look, and it's so, everything is so serious in the video. Oh, captivating.
Yeah. I love that. It's so interesting. People's reaction is like beyond what I could have ever. Both Cynthia and I are like, "What is happening?" We thought it was cool, but not this cool.
Yeah, I think that we'll talk more about that in a second, but I was wondering, of all the Taylor Swift songs you could have chosen, how is it that you went with a brand new album track? And I read on your Twitter that when you heard I Did Something Bad, it was Love at First Listen for you, and I was wondering if you could explain why that is.
I'll retract a little bit of my statement. Nothing of Taylor's is ever Love at First Listen for me. Taylor is like an earworm to me. Like, I always go through once and I'm like, nah, I'm not into it. And then something will bring me back to it. Like, when I heard this one, I was in Hawaii and I was like, I need treadmill music. Like, I'm not, you know, treadmill is not my traditional workout, but my normal workout, but when I'm traveling, it's like the only choice. So, one of the only. So I was like, God, I guess I better listen to this Taylor Swift album. If for nothing else, it's going to give me like a great beat. You know what I mean? And that second time through, I was like, holy shit, this is a great album. And for some reason, I think it was lyrically of Something Bad that caught me first. I think it was You Gotta Leave Before You Get Left was the line that I started, like, my ears perked up and I paid attention. So then I put it on repeat and I was like, ah. And her mention of the violin, and I was like, oh, it'd be so cool to cover this with a violin. And then I just kind of spiraled from there. But that's generally how it works with her. I hear stuff and I'm like, it's fine. And then I go back and I'm like, I can't get, like with 1989, I was real late on that train and then I just couldn't get enough. So yeah, that's what happened.
Well, this is a rare instance where we're talking about a brand new track too. So it's rare that I hear a cover version of a song before I hear the original. And your version completely reimagines what Taylor does with it. And B, I think honestly, it kind of murders the original.
I feel like that's sweet, but I feel like we'd only be able to murder the original if there was something good to work with in the first place. Do you know what I mean? If that's your opinion of what we did, you know?
I think that a lot of times with pop music, you know, we are, we're more focused on, like, the production and the sonic. Like, a lot of what Taylor's new record is doing is a lot of sonic elements, you know? A lot of what I would call, and of course I'm not hip and on it, but there's a lot of, like, trap influence and a lot of EDM influence going on with this record. And sometimes that can overshadow what's also just a good song on its own, that it can stand alone with just a couple violins or just a piano or just a guitar, which is what I think is the magic of Taylor Swift in the first place, is the fact that, like, she's a great songwriter. No one can dispute that. And when you strip away all the bells and whistles, that's what's there. And I think that's all we really did. It was just strip away the bells and whistles. I didn't think it was a huge reimagining. I heard her say violin. To me, the production elements already are, like, you know, are violins, kind of like in an electronic way. So it seems kind of on the nose to me, but I think it's not a single yet, but to me it was my favorite thing on the record. And so if I was going to cover anything, which I just don't do it, I don't often cover because I just don't feel like I am, like, really drawn to or moved by stuff, especially in pop music, that often, you know. But I don't know, this one was just special to me. So we moved fast.
One of the things I think makes this track so mind-blowing for me as a listener, now I think that perhaps because I listen to a lot of, I mean, I know that people listen to a lot of music, but I listen to a lot of music listening for people to interview or the next big thing or like a breakout artist or things like that. So I may listen to it in a different way, but what I was so taken by is that all of those production elements that you're talking about with Taylor Swift, it's like, and in music today, create like a wall of sound. Everything is so layered and produced. And this is two insanely good vocalists and two incredible instrumentalists and nothing else. And it sounds completely full and completely rich.
Which is why I thought no one would care, because we're all so used to and wanting to hear things done a specific way, you know? Whether we know it or not, our ears get used to this wall of sound you speak of. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Unless we're hearing that, like, these certain things that have become really common in pop music today, unless we're hearing that, we're not really interested a lot of times. We're just kind of, like, anesthetized almost, you know? So that's, again, why I'm just fascinated and impressed by people, you know what I mean, that they would be interested in such a stripped-down arrangement. And, you know, my idea from the beginning was, like, I said, it's more like a moving Vanity Fair cover. You know what I mean? I just felt like this was very regal and cold and controlled. That's how I wanted it to be. And I said, you know, I think we should, you know, be very still, as if this were, like, I'm like, obsessed with Downton Abbey. So I'm like, Downton Abbey made a music video. This is kind of what it would be. It would just be very still and regal. And then Cynthia took it one step further, because in my mind I was like, well, we'll be still, and then towards the end, you know, this is these key spots we can really let loose, you know. She was like, I don't know, I think it's more powerful if we just don't ever let loose. And I was like, is that going to be enough to keep people's attention, though? And she was like, yeah, that'll be enough. So it was a lesson for me, too, and, like, you know, you don't always have to do the most, you know.
One of the things that certainly reminded me of, and it was like a cultural phenomenon when I was growing up, and you are a few years younger.
Are you going to say what I think you're going to say?
It's,
I hope you do.
It's so reminiscent of the women playing guitar in Robert Palmer's video.
You did it. Yes, that is exactly what we talked about. She didn't know really the reference because she's younger than I am by a good 10 years, but she had said, well, we ended up being in all black because I had wanted us in, like, gowns. I wanted it very, like, stylized and regal. And she was flying in, and she was like, I just didn't have time to pack. And I was like, cool, we'll just do all black. I'll bring you, like, some of my yoga clothes, because she's also tiny. And she said, I'll just borrow something from your closet. I'm like, nothing's going to fit you, tiny person. So I'll bring you, like, some yoga clothes, and we'll just do all black. So when we were in the studio, I'm like, you know, this is going to end up being, like, the Robert Plant Girls. So it's like, strung out, don't want to be there, like, you know, that's what we're going to look like.
Well, even your hair all slicked back like that.
What did you say?
Even your hair being all slicked back and everything? Oh my God, totally.
Yeah. I'm so glad you picked up on that. That was definitely part of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, and it's crazy because that imagery became iconic. Him singing just in front of those girls is iconic, and I think that you sort of captured a little bit of that. Okay.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you've got it. We did it.
Now,
I love it.
Can we talk for a moment, just one moment, about how amazing Cynthia Erivo is? I mean, you know her, obviously. But
yes.
Insane.
Yes, she is very, very talented. No question about that.
Oh, my gosh.
And smart, very smart.
Yeah, I mean, just incredibly talented. And both of you, I loved seeing two people who are so revered. Both of you are revered in the Broadway community, certainly. And...
Aww.
Well, it's true. Don't. Now's not the time to get coy. But
no, it's just a big word, and I've been gone for so long. So when you say stuff like that, or whatever, it's very humbling and flattering. So that's why it's not coy. It's not like faux humility. It literally is like the fact that anyone would, you know, still acknowledge or you know, it's been a long time. I haven't been there in years, so it's just very nice. Thank you.
Well, to see the two of you, who we have come accustomed to seeing on stage being other people, you know, other characters, other people, displaying your talent and owning something that's pop music oriented that is maybe more accessible to the masses, for us to see you as other than some stage presentation of a character.
Fair enough. Fair enough, yeah. Maybe more so for her than me. I've been doing this. You know, I haven't been on stage in 100 years, so I feel like this is kind of where I live now, is just being myself. But for her, you know, I don't know how much she's done that people have seen beyond, you know, Color Purple or her sort of performances on all of these amazing TV shows and award shows or whatever else. But this is probably the first, like, I think, I don't want to speak too out of turn, but probably the first thing she's done really... Since the show that was like just a random, like you said, not in character type of situation. Even though we kind of were in character of a sort, but.
I'm curious what it was like to have even Taylor Swift gagging over this cover. I mean, she tweeted about you guys, so.
I know, and that was crazy to me because my friend in the morning was like, well, what if Taylor sees it? I'm like, she's not going to see it. And like 4 hours later, I woke up from a nap, and the guy who just produced my new record is Taylor Swift's MD. So I woke up to a text from him. It was like, you got a retweet. And I'm like, huh? Like, thank you. I thought he was saying he did it. I'm like, thanks, pal. And so then I went on Twitter, and I saw that she had. And so I was like, did you do that? And he was like, nope, didn't say a word. Also, two of my best friends are her backup singer. So I texted them, and I'm like, just because you guys, thank you so much. And I'm like, nope, we haven't seen her all day. And I was like, what? And so she found it on her own, and they were like, she doesn't tweet or retweet anymore. Like, she's just not as engaged in social media as she used to be. Doesn't follow anybody, doesn't, you know, have a whole, like, reinvention for reputation went. And they're like, this kind of amazing that she found it and was moved to comment on it. So we were flattered because, you know, I love the song so much. So I would want to... I never would want to. You never know if you're going to offend someone or, like, you know. I know personally I love seeing my music covered by other people, and I love seeing how they reimagine and reinvent. So I would only hope that it would, you know, have the same effect on her, that she would I don't know, enjoy it, respect it, be flattered. I don't know. I just love the song.
One of the things I have to ask you is, clearly through your work with Postmodern Jukebox, you're accustomed to sort of reinventing pop songs in different styles other than what the masses are used to hearing them as. I was wondering if this is just how your mind operates. When you hear a pop song, do you think to yourself, you know what, I really think that we should just strip this down and have a, like, a viola in it and just a violin and a bass, maybe?
No, it couldn't be less how my mind operates. That's the other reason this was, like, so magical, because it came to me immediately, like exactly what it needs to be. And that doesn't happen to me. You know, when I work with Postmodern Jukebox or I work with Target, they're the ones who come up with the seed of the idea. And generally, you know, maybe I'll bring a song to them. I'll say, I want to do this one, and they'll say, okay, you know, but they're the ones who have the musical genius, and I contribute once Scott says, like, oh, let's do, you know, Starry like it's Motown. Then I take it home, and I do all the background arrangements and, you know, all that kind of stuff, but I generally am terrible. That's the reason I don't do more covers, because I'm like, why should I do a cover, especially on YouTube, if I don't have a way to reinvent it? I don't need to just do what the artist did, because they did it, and they did it fantastically. And I feel like, I just feel like I don't need to do it unless I have something new to bring to it. And so that doesn't happen to me that often. I don't hear it that well. And same with my, again, I keep going back to it, but my new record, like, is a lot of covers on my new record. And I, you know, I was not the one who said, let's do this, let's do it this way. I'm like, these are the songs I want to do, to my music director, Dave Cook, or my producer, Taylor Zendy, Dave. I was like, you tell me how we're going to do these, you know? It's just not. But with this one, for some reason, she said violin, and I heard those, like, plucky sounds, and I'm like, that's the only thing I know to do is to strip things down. You know what I mean? Because as a singer, I'm like, that's what I do is sing. So if it's stripped down, then I get to do more of what I do, right?
Of all the amazing original tracks and covers you've published on your YouTube channel, even though this is so new, I'm sure you've been kind of pondering, like, why is this the one that has set everybody off? And I was wondering what it is that you've come to in your mind.
Oh, we've had many, I've been asking a lot of people, Cynthia and I have had many conversations about it. And I think there's a couple answers. I think personally it's kind of a perfect storm. I think it was Cynthia and I together, because we've never done anything together. I think it was the fact that if you think about Cynthia and I together, and this is for the people who know us, this excludes, like, actually probably a majority of who watched it, because if you think about the numbers we have now, there's only a tiny portion of those numbers that are probably people who even knew who we were, you know? But if you think about what Cynthia and I do vocally, we didn't do that on this. So I think people are waiting to hear that moment, and it doesn't happen. So I think that's kind of riveting. They're waiting for it. I think the look of it was turned into something accidentally captivating. Like you said, the stillness of it all and the control of it all and the makeup and the, like, the whole stylistic, all of that, the way the camera's moving, the way we're sitting, the way she did our makeup, the way we're dressed and hair and all of that. It just kind of all fell together that way. And then I think it's a lesser known track off of one of the biggest records in the world right now, from one of the biggest artists in the world right now, who just put out this brand new huge record, you know. And I guess we did it in an unexpected way. And then she retweeted it, you know. And then all these publications are picking it up gratefully. So I just feel like, I don't know, it was the perfect storm. And, you know, to be honest, because I've talked to some people about it, because as an artist, you know, there's things that I think are important, that I am passionate about, that I believe for, that I, you know, hemorrhage money into, that I, like, think are so important and are going to change the world when I put them out, and are going to change my career, and it's so important. And you put them out, and it's like crickets. You know what I mean? No one, it doesn't resonate, or they don't gravitate, or it doesn't hit, or it doesn't reach that tipping point, or whatever. And then you do something silly that you thought about on a treadmill in Hawaii, that you made a couple calls and made happen in a matter of days with your pal who flew in from New York for 2 days, and you threw on some yoga clothes, and, like, you know what I mean? And that goes crazy, and I'm like, there's a couple conversations that have made me think, like, one, it is supposed to be fun. You know, I think a lot of times we all take our work so incredibly seriously, and sometimes things like this are a reminder that, like, hey, it's allowed to be fun and maybe silly and not necessarily always have a purpose or a point, you know? And also, like, I think I'm the type of person who loves content. I need, like something to sink my teeth into, to teach me something and then change me and inspire me and heal me. Like, I'm just that kind of a thirsty person with arts and, like, whatever TV shows I watch or whatever books I read or whatever music I listen to. I want it to be filling me up. And every once in a while, like I said, I want to jump on the treadmill and I want some candy like Taylor Swift to get me through. But I think a lot of people need candy right now. I think the world is, you know, kind of shitty sometimes, and that day that our song came out was a shitty day. There was horrible headlines, which is not uncommon, you know, with from day to day these days. And I think sometimes people just want to escape a little bit, and I forget that that's also my job as an artist, not just to put out stuff that changes things, you know, but also to just give people 5 minutes to, like, have a little bit of a fantasy world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be part of it, too. I don't know. And I talk to people like Todrick and Scott. Todrick and Scott are really smart about what people want, what they can palette, what they have a very specific audience, and they know what their audience wants, you know? So I've learned a lot from them, but I still don't think I get the formula. Like I said, they have a very specific audience. I don't. I think my audience is made up of a ton of different types of people, so trying to, like, pinpoint what they want or what's going to hit is always very difficult for me. But I don't know. Even Scott, I could talk to Scott. I'm like, what do you think are the ones that hit so hard and get picked up by all the press? And, like, he's like, Shoshana, there's no telling. Like, some of the greatest ones we've done haven't gotten the attention I thought they would, and then some of the silliest ones are the ones that go completely, you know, viral. So, I don't know. That's the best answer I can give. And then I say, I have no clue.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting to me. So I'm sitting here listening to your response, and you know, sometimes it is just about timing or whatever. And the reason I say that, another interview that I've got upcoming is on the podcast is going to be with the singer. People know her for her one big hit, which was I've Never Been to Me. Her name is Charlene. And in the stories that she tells about that song, she released it in the mid 70s. And then it was 8 years later and she was working at a candy store, you know, completely had given up music. And they called her and said, by the way, your song just broke into the top 40. You know, and she was like, I don't even have a song. She's like, I haven't even sung in like 8 years. And it was just about the timing. And sometimes things just sort of sit until they get, until the time is right.
Yeah.
Now,
man.
You've mentioned repeatedly your upcoming album Spectrum, which is going to be available from what I've read in February of 2018.
Yeah.
You mentioned that there's going to be covers on it. And one of the things that is important to note about a person, as a person who's kind of seen your career evolve over time, is that your music that you release on your albums does not always reflect necessarily what we hear from you in between albums. The covers that you do are so different, and your work with Postmodern Jukebox is so different, and your work on stage is so different. And then you give us stuff like Runaway Train or Cold Turkey, and it's really, like, a little off in left field. And I was wondering what people should expect from the new record.
The good news about the new record is it's now sort of, like, taking all parts of who I am. It's very hard, you know, to be an artist and feel like, you know, like you said, you feel like Cold Turkey and Runaway Train are left field for me because of what you know of me. But what I know of me and my entire 40 years of life, like, Runaway Train and Cold Turkey are huge parts of who I am and where I come from, you know, especially musically and all of that. It's just a matter of, like, what people know of me. So it's been very hard to navigate what parts of myself I'm allowed to show or share, or what people are interested in knowing and what they are not interested in knowing. It's really hard because as an artist, you want to feel like you're utilizing all parts of yourself and speaking authentically and truthfully, you know, not just lyrically, but musically. And then people, you know, and then people take into account, like, what people actually want from you. So I feel like this album does that. I feel like no matter where you found me along the way or how you found me along the way, this album is going to show you all parts of who I am, which is why I call it Spectrum, because in lieu of calling it Full Spectrum, it's like full view, you know, whether you found me because of Broadway or Postmodern Jukebox or one of my own records or the Soul Train Awards or however, there's going to be something on here that you're like, yep, there she is, that's how I know her, and that's why I love her, because she does that thing, you know. I'm honoring, you know, where I came from with, like, traditional jazz music and soul, and then I think there's a lot of theatricality on this album, you know, largely inspired by Streisand and Frank Sinatra and Aretha Franklin. So I think that there won't feel like there's anything out of left field on this, you know. I will feel like you're like, yes, this is what I've been wanting you to do. I hope that's been the goal anyway. And then I also feel happy because I feel like I'm getting to use all parts of my voice physically and voice, like, metaphorically, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that it's been difficult in the past for people who are known as theatrical vocalists or stage performers to make the translation sometimes into, I don't say pop as meaning like probably the way most people think of pop, but pop meaning just kind of genre crossing popular music. And it, you know, I think, for example, somebody who I'm sure that you've been compared to numerous times in your career, I look at Idina Menzel's pop forays, and when I listen to those songs, I'm like, oh, this is a pop song, but when she performs it, it sounds like it should be in a musical. There's just something about her voice that kind of delivers that message.
Yeah. I have such a hard time with that. I know what you mean, because I will hear other theater artists, theater performers make an album, and I hear that they can't get the theater out of their voice. You know what I mean? There's a big difference in pop singing and in theater singing, you know? But I have a hard time with that, because people do resist allowing you to cross genres, you know? When I first started out, there was no crossing over from theater to the pop world. Heather Headley was like the only one that kind of did it legitimately, you know what I mean? But I think things are changing now, and people are more, they have been changing from the Glees and the Smashers and like the American Idols, you know, they're crossing over into Broadway, and Broadway's crossing over into pop. Like, all the lines are getting more blurred, you know. Cynthia made some comment the other day about, why haven't you done this? Why haven't you done that? I'm like, Cynthia, your Broadway is a very different Broadway from mine, you know, 10, 12 years ago. Like, it's just a different place. And you guys are, the Broadway of today is so much more widely accepted into pop culture than we were even 10 or 12 years ago, you know? So. I think I've just taken you on a walk. I can't remember what the original question was.
No, it's quite all right. And, I would say that Cynthia's Broadway also is different than what I would even compare to your Broadway, just in terms of the style of music that has been presented in The Color Purple. It's soul music. It's not what I would consider stuff that sounds exactly like it should be on stage, per se. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
But keep in mind, it does, but don't forget that the same time I was in Wicked, the original Color Purple was happening, and it did not have that effect. Mm. It did not have that moment that this Color Purple had. And I do think that Hamilton has completely shifted the tide, you know, because they definitely were completely accepted by the pop community and totally crossed over, and Color Purple was there at the same time, you know? So there was this resurgence of this cool factor and this interest in Broadway, I think, you know? And I think, again, we're going back to timing. I think the timing served everyone on Broadway, because Color Purple's been there before. And, of course, this was a totally different production and totally reimagined and a totally different cast. And so I don't take away from that at all. But I do think timing plays a huge, huge part in that. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it continues to shift and where it continues to go. I do agree that the music is being written to serve, you know, just the same way it was back in the 40s and 50s. The music on Broadway was the pop music of the time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's what Lynn has said that many times too, of like, yo, like, we're just doing what they used to do. I want the songs on stage to be on the radio too. And he did that. He's the first person to really do that. I mean, they had like Seasons of Love, Stevie Wonder covered it from Rent, you know, and that was on the radio. There was like a Defying Gravity remix. I'm like, things have like skimmed the waters, but Lynn really did it, you know, and I hope that it continues to go that way, because there's so much good music on Broadway and so many good composers and so much good talent. I think that the general public and the pop community is missing out if they alienate Broadway artists for sounding a certain way or whatever, you know what I mean?
It's
as easy as getting a vocal producer in the room and being like, take out that vibrato, don't hit the R's so hard or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I have such a soft spot for Lynn. My ex-boyfriend was in the Heights on Broadway, and I had the opportunity to meet him on numerous occasions. And I just think he's like the coolest, the nicest, and obviously has revolutionized Broadway over the last number of years in ways that nobody could have imagined, I don't think. So incredible.
See, In the Heights that's my favorite. Like,
mine too.
That changed everything for me. I thought In the Heights, like, I understand, you know, Hamilton was the one that really got people's attention. But I'm like, y'all, he did this in the Heights. Like, there was rap and hip hop, and like, In the Heights was, I still think, is such a beautiful, beautiful piece of theater, and so underrated and so overshadowed by Hamilton, I think.
Well, it's my favorite musical ever, and it, I mean,
is it?
Well, to my credit, like, it's also the only one that I got to see, like, 17 times in, like, 8 cities, right? Because my ex was on tour, and I went to all the... So, I mean, nothing compares to Champagne to me, the track Champagne from that. Like, I think it's adorable. It's so sweet. Anyway, sidetracked. Okay. So, clearly, I would really love to talk to you about what appears to be a deep connection to an appreciation for the LGBTQ community with you. I mean, it's in your videos, it's in your life, it's in the things that you dedicate your time to. And so I was wondering if you could talk to me about the origin of that.
I don't know that there is an origin. I think, you know, I was raised around all types of people. There was never a moment that it was like, oh, this is, there was never a difference in your sexual orientation. Like, there was never a separation to me in my family and my friends. Like, it just wasn't ever a thing. And I think upbringing is the first thing where people start to form their ideas and their opinions and their judgments about things. And that didn't exist in my household. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, I'm from the theater community. My family of friends is comprised of all of these different flavors of people, you know? I guess it's a no-brainer to me. I think that it's easy to be involved and to speak up because I'm surrounded by it and opportunities to do so. But it's just like with anything. Anytime there is anyone being oppressed or discriminated against or bullied or people are trying to deny them their rights, I mean, I'm going to stand for it. I don't necessarily solo or single out the LGBTQ community. It's just kind of where I fit, and it's right there, and it's around me, and the opportunities are there. But I'm no more passionate about that than I am about, you know, now we know about the slavery in Libya, or like simple discrimination and racism that's around us every single day. Like, it's all the same thing. I will lend my voice to whomever and whatever and blow the whistle on whatever I feel like needs to be called attention to. But, you know, that community is my family and my supporters and my cheerleaders and the people who surround me and lift me up. So I can't imagine not being there for them. Does that make sense?
Of course. But you've taken it, you know, even a step farther in terms of representation. Thinking back to your 2014 video for Runaway Train, where it starts off with a young boy being bullied on the playground, and then he goes and he transforms in his garage into drag. And the way I took the video is sort of like he's either imagining himself to be you as a grown woman, or I was a little late on that train, you know, so to speak, but I was wonder what the genesis for that concept was.
That actually, we came up with that concept, Patrick and I, together. And I don't really actually remember how it morphed. We threw a lot of ideas around for that video. But for some reason, as soon as we hit on something that I thought would make a statement, that's the one I wanted. Because what's the point, like, of having anyone listen or pay attention? If I'm not going to say something, I go back to what I told you about, like, content. Like, I don't want to put out empty calories and candy. I want to put out things that make people think or scratch their head or wonder, or, you know, anything. And I don't know if I'm reaching the people I want to reach. I don't know if I'm reaching someone who, like, bullied a gay kid on the playground and comes home and sees the Runaway Train video and is like, I should be a better person. I don't know if that's happening. But I certainly feel like if some little gay kid who's at home, you know, feeling different and terrible about himself sees that video and is like, okay, it's okay. You know, I don't know. But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, the concept was definitely a kid. We didn't even say he was necessarily gay. Maybe he just liked to dress up in his, you know, mom's old clothes. But the point was, like, I have a safe place to go, and I envision myself as, like, this feminine superhero. Whether it was Shosha Shauna Bean or like just this vision of this badass chick who wears high heels and rides a motorcycle. I don't know. You know, we all lived in a house where we made do with what we had, right? I played dress up with the clothes that I had and utilized the garage in the way that I could to facilitate my fantasy. So if this little kid grew up in a household with like mom's old clothes and dad's bike in the garage, like you make up what you do. So there wasn't, it wasn't necessarily definitively a gay kid or, you know, it's just, but I think that kids should, you know, obviously be able to feel what they feel and explore how they do and play with Barbies if boys want to and give other boys flowers just because they like that. I don't know, you know, so that's kind of a convoluted answer, but I just, I always, if I can make a statement, I would like to. And I feel like coming back to the I Did Something Bad video as well, I think my being drawn to that song and the way that I wanted to do it, it was just a female empowerment thing. I think there's a lot of women finally standing up for themselves right now.
Right.
I've never not been a woman who stood up for myself, so it's kind of, I kind of tilt my head a little bit and be like, really? Now? But I'm lucky like that, you know? And I realize not everybody felt comfortable or strong enough or brave enough to do it. And so I feel like Cynthia and I are both very fearless, ferocious women, and it felt like the time to make a statement. And I feel like that song gives us permission to be like, whatever, you think me being brave or going after what I want is bad or, you know, not feminine? Well, if it were a guy, you wouldn't say that. He'd be a badass. You know, he'd be a boss.
That I think that is always something that has been an issue for women who want to, as they say, well-behaved women never make a difference, right? Like, you know, it's like kind of thing. You have to break the rules.
I've never heard that, but I love it.
It's I'm trying to remember how it goes. Well-behaved women don't make history, or I would look it up for you, but just type in well-behaved women don't in Google. But it's a famous saying that basically when you behave the way everybody think you should, the likelihood that you're going to do something that is going to be lasting is minimal because you are only going to live to the expectations of whatever anybody has of you. And I think that goes for all people. You know, if I had so many years ago listened to what I should be and who I should be and repressed or pushed down who I am, I would not only be terribly unhappy, but most of the things that I am proud of accomplishing in life would have never been a possibility.
Well-behaved women seldom make history.
Yes, that is correct.
That's what I found. Anyway, I mean, I said what you meant.
So that's it, you know, and I think that it's when we do things that are seen as rebellious, that's when we're going against the grain of things and we get the opportunity to stand out and be ourselves.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable, though, and I think that's why more people don't do it. Some of us have been uncomfortable our whole lives.
Right.
Nothing new. Some people spend their lives trying to avoid discomfort, and I think that the best things that ever happened in my life came out of me being willing to be uncomfortable. It may have been uncomfortable for a minute, an hour, a week, a year, a couple years. You know, I know some people have bigger challenges that take a couple years to pull through, but I think you just have to be willing to be uncomfortable and not be popular for a second. I don't know, you know?
Well, my best friend is a therapist, yeah, anyway. And he said that many people in life are inclined to shy away or pull back from conflict or anything that could be perceived as conflict. And there are other people, in life who lean into conflict. And he describes me as one of those people, by the way, that, you know, unafraid to have that momentary butting of heads so that once that's done, everybody has either a greater understanding of one another or, you know, you've stood up for yourself. Like, no, this doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Other people will just allow it to happen and be like, oh, I wish it would have happened this way or that way, but they would never really voice that.
Totally right. We've become terrified of conflict. And, you know, a lot of it is we're raised that way. Fighting is bad. Crying is bad. Like, you know, demanding what you want is bad. You're not the only person here. You know, whatever. Like, all of that is just a learned thing, and we start to, like, maneuver so we avoid that, being criticized for, or like you said, just having conflict and being uncomfortable. Or making someone else uncomfortable, God forbid, you know?
I know, but, right?
I don't know. The older I get, the more I'm like, there's no time for this. There's no time sometimes. But you don't have to be a horrible person or be mean. There's beautiful and articulate and graceful ways to handle everything.
But absolutely.
There just really isn't enough time to not go for the best and be your best. And sometimes that involves conflict. Well,
saying the same thing. Shoshana, I know that you've got such a crazy schedule, and I just am so grateful that you've taken time to talk today. It's been enlightening and wonderful and exciting. So thank you.
Aww. Thank you for reaching out. I'm so grateful to talk to you. Thank you, thank you, and thank you for your interest in our little video.
Well, it is blowing up for you guys every time. Well, this is the bright side of being obsessed with it. So I listen to it like dozens of times a day. And every time I go on YouTube, it's got like 10,000 new views for you guys. And probably only 3,000 of them are my doing. So, yeah, it's like, it's very exciting to watch something knowing that, I will say this, maybe nobody has mentioned this to you before, but one of the reasons why I love this, and it's not because I think sonically it sounds the same, but there's an element of your version of the song that reminds me a little bit of Gotye featuring Kimbra, somebody I used to know. It's that same kind of...
Oh my gosh!
Like, it's kind of got the same acoustic-y... Yeah, there's just something about it I love, and that's a song, obviously, that did so well. So I think that your version of this song is really captivating people in a way that, whether they love the original or not, is going to be accessible to them.
Interesting. I actually hadn't thought about that. I love that freaking song, so I love that drawing that comparison. I hadn't thought about that, but I love it. I love it.
So, well, thank you so much for giving me my new earworm. Like, we'll credit Taylor Swift for writing it, but the way you guys performed it's what made me love it. So I appreciate that. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I hope to talk to you soon and have wonderful holidays. Thank you.
You too. All right. Have a great day.
Good day. Take care.
Bye.
You too.
Go now, if you have not already. That's Shoshana Bean. Look up Shoshana Bean and Cynthia Erivo covering Taylor Swift, I Did Something Bad, on YouTube. When I discovered it, it only had it had less than 200,000 views. It is now up to almost 500,000 views. And for being something that is only basically growing on its viral quality, this is insane. I think that this is going to take off for them. It's so beautiful. And a big shout out to Shoshana Bean's cover of Stone Cold. You have to go listen to that. She hits a whistle note in her version, which sends chills up my spine every time I hear it. That was Shoshana Bean. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I am Poya Del Mar, and we will be back in a minute.
Oh, she really came that way?
All right.
My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right. All right. All right.
I need to
get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Foul Radio.
I don't get cute, I get drop dead gorgeous.
And we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Poyo Del Mar, and I am so mad right now. I am so mad. Because Pearl Tees and I had a tremendous kiki for you to end this episode, but my stupid ass lost it. I'm not exactly sure how that happened. Girl, we went hog wild on the Wet For Her lesbian sex toy website. Pearl and I were getting a good old gag over all of those lesbian for lesbian sex toys. Go check them out at wetforher.com. Alice from wetforher.com will be with us next episode to talk about what makes the Wet For Her products so special. Pearl and I are hoping to get a delivery of dildos. Maybe we can sit around here in the studio and check out how those work. Regardless of that, if you are out there and you are shopping wetforher.com and the dildos that they provide, the sex toys that they make, by women for women are the way to go if you've got a lesbian or a woman in your life that you want to give some pleasure into the new year, honey. That's going to be the way. Meanwhile, as you might have just heard, that was Shoshana Bean, and I'm obsessed still to this day with Shoshana and Cynthia Erivo's cover of Taylor Swift, I Did Something Bad. The thing that I want to let you know, like the Frank Music interview from earlier in this episode, get this, Shoshana actually called me back after our interview and said, you know what, there's some stuff I still didn't say that I would like to talk to you about. And you are going to gag, girl. She literally tells me stuff about her time on Broadway that she has never shared with anyone before. So that is going to be on next episode as well. So next episode, you already know what you've got coming. It is more of Shoshana Bean spilling all the tea about her time on Broadway at playing Elphaba in Wicked, giving us information that nobody knows. You theater queens out there, I know you are clutching the damn pearls at this very moment. Like, oh, Shoshana Bean is going to tell me something about Wicked. Oh, girl, I can't wait. Well, it's true, and you're going to die when you hear it because I was gagged. That is going to be on. Remember, Frank Music will be back in two episodes for the last episode of 2017 with what is also a jaw-dropping continuation of our interview. But we're hoping to have, in the interim, Cynthia Erivo on with us, as well as lesbian hitmaker Rhea May from Canada. She is making big waves in her home country with her new single, Bend, and it's beginning to make inroads in the United States as well as around the world. She's going to talk about her new album, the new single, as well as touring with Tegan and Sarah and much, much more. That's a great interview that's already done. It's in the can, so to speak, and we are excited to bring that to you. Meanwhile, since Pearl Tees is not here, and I screwed up our outro, I'm going to say goodbye for both of us. But before we go, I do want to give a big quick shout out to end the show to our girl, Mona Elyafi. Mona Elyafi runs an public relations firm that is geared towards the female community. And she has brought us some of the best lesbian talents around the world. Alice from Wet for Her is a result of her, as well as all of our connections to the Dinosaur Weekend and many, many more. So Mona, thank you so much for helping contribute to our last almost two full years of success on this podcast. From Pearl and me, girl, we give you a big shout out. For the rest of you, follow us on social media at Party Foul Radio on both Twitter and Facebook. That's Party Foul Radio. Until next week, I am Poyo Del Mar. On behalf of Pearl Tees, bye. We're out of here, girls. It's over. It's over. It's over. She's the one. Girl, you better work.